This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
South Africa has a rich maritime history and is known as the gateway into the continent. But in recent years, it seems our reputation has declined in the international maritime circles, and strategic focus needed to be paid to ensure the country maintains its leading role on the continent. Joining us on the line today is Sobantu Tilahi, who is the acting CEO of the South African Maritime Safety Authority, as we get into our green economy feature. Sobantu, welcome to the show.
Good day to you and good day to your listener.
Why should the ordinary South African care about what's happening in our seas? Because more often than not, when you think about the sea, you think about swimming and that's it.
Because your life, your economy, your 97% of the things that you see and touch, by the time you get to experience those, they have had something to do with the water and the ocean's economy.
Yeah.
Remember, South Africa is far removed from its trading partners. You've got coal that we mine here that creates a lot of employment, but that coal must end up in market, typically in China or Eastern Europe.
Yeah.
Iron ore, etc. You've got cars that must come here, TVs that must come from South Korea, Samsung, and China, and elsewhere. Now, such is the importance of the maritime for the country. This is over and above the fishing, which is the protein sustenance that we need as people, and all the other things, including the control of weather from an environmental sustainability point of view.
Uh-huh.
So the ocean that surrounds us has so much value that we don't necessarily see all the time, but it is that important to us. And as such, then we need to worry about it and concern ourselves about it, over and above the fact that there is a lot of economic benefit that you can derive from the ocean.
Speaking of the economic, something you can derive from it economically, how big is the South African maritime sector and who are the key players in this sector?
In 2015, this country, South Africa, paid 46 billion rand in freight costs. That was the cost of moving your goods to market and fetching the goods to market, just paying those trucks that are called ships that call into our ports.
Yeah.
Now, there's 13,000 of these ships that called for that entire year. And the total number of employees that those ships would have been employing is upwards of 200,000 seafarers. Now, those are the number of jobs.
Yeah.
Because South Africa, we get very little of that because of the level of development of our maritime sector, which is the reason that the country has been engaging in projects like Operation Pakisa and all the other initiatives that seek to direct our attention towards the maritime economy.
Okay. When you're talking about Operation Pakisa, just in a nutshell, what's that about?
Operation Pakisa was born out of, again, realizing the potential of the ocean's economy. Maybe to go back to your last question, what we did when we were trying to segment this maritime sector, we came up with five distinct areas. We started off with four. We said that there is the maritime logistics and shipping. And these are the people that operate ships, those people that work in ports, those people that work as freight forwarders, ship chandlers, ship agents, and the like. And then that has got its own supporting environment, your maritime legal experts, your maritime insurers. And of course, I was saying to you earlier, the level of development of the country is such that we import many of these services where, in fact, we should be able to cultivate and develop our own.
Yeah.
But moving on along that segmentation, then you get into an area of oil and gas. You would be aware that Total found some gas reserves on the southern basin, just southwards of Mossel Bay. And that is quite a lot of reserves that are going to require us to gear up for explorations that take place offshore. Now, I don't know if you know, but there's a lot of oil that sits below the water column. And we, as a country, have a band of 350 kilometers inwards to the sea where we can derive all the economic benefit. So we can get the fish in the water column, but we can get the oil and gas under the water column.
Yeah.
You place a platform, you drill for the oil, and off you go. Petro SA was built exactly for that purpose.
Uh-huh.
And then you've got a huge fishing sector that employs hundreds of thousands of people, both in the fish extraction and then the fish processing industry. And then you've got marine tourism, which is quite big. Well, there's not much marine tourism happening in the COVID times, but there is generally, we're trying to repatriate, in fact, now upwards of 4,000 seafarers that have been stuck all around the world because the cruise tourism has shut down and all of these people need to come home. So it tells you that there is quite a bit of potential that if we were to pay focus onto it, we could enhance it because these are international jobs based on international standards with good earning capabilities.
Now, in terms of schooling, do you feel that there is a bit of awareness on the jobs that can be done from a maritime perspective?
In a big way, yes, there is. In fact, I've been having a discussion just a few moments before I took your call. The point here is that it is good to create that awareness. But I was saying to my colleagues that that pipeline from somebody being aware to somebody being trained, educated, trained, to somebody coming off that line to get to the actual job opportunity initially, that pipeline has to be seamless, has to be deep-locked such that it is able to offer the opportunity that you raise an expectation by making people aware of its existence.
We
need to deal with the last part of the pipe, that of making sure that we access the jobs that are rightfully South African.
Yes.
And as I'm saying to you, the 12,000, 13,000 ships that call into the country, there is a fair amount of jobs that we should be staking a claim on those jobs. Those ships that work off the coast, we've got offshore oil explorations, we've got offshore activities. There is the opportunities that we should be staking on. Now, from a government perspective, we've developed a comprehensive maritime transport policy, which seeks to try and claw back some of those lost jobs. We're hoping that our discussion with those people who are generally foreign nationals that get the benefit is going to yield a result where we can get some of those jobs back into the country. And only then that awareness would cause people to get into that pipeline, get off and get into the jobs. It's going to be a long-term project, but Operation Pagisa gave us a starting point, which we had at trying to still progress.
If you've just joined us, this is Power Lunch on Power 987. We are in conversation with the acting CEO of the South African Maritime Safety Authority, Sobhantu Dilai, as we look into the South African ocean economy. Dr. Dilai, a bit earlier on, you were talking about bunkering. What is bunkering and what role does this service play in the South African economy?
The South African coastline, South Africa as a country, we're located in a good strategic position geographically. We're halfway between east and west. Whether you're moving from North America to China, or you're moving from Europe to China, because most of these ships cannot go through the Suez Canal. They must come around the Cape of Good Hope.
Mm.
Now, what happens, by the time you hit the South African coastline, you have been in the water underway for no less than 18, 21 days. You need fuel, but when ships stop for fuel, then they take stores, food, they change crew, they do minor repairs, they do a whole lot of other activities that have got economic value.
Uh-huh.
So we used the bunkering. Bunkering is simply put, it's supplying, it's like a filling station.
Uh-huh.
So it's like supplying fuel to passing ships. And
yes.
I normally use an example that if you are located in northern KZN, give me a town, Ladysmith, along the N3 from Durban to Johannesburg.
Mm-hmm.
And the best thing you can do is to put up an ultra city there, because cars will stop there.
Yes.
To take fuel.
Yes.
And once they are there, then you need a shop, and somebody can have a small tire repair shop, and a whole lot of other things that cause convenience to those that travel.
Mm.
So South Africa is to the world maritime traffic what an ultra city is to somebody traveling between two cities quite far apart.
Aha. Okay, so that makes a lot of sense. So in terms of SAF Marine, what are your views on that?
Well, SAF Marine was created, a company created solely to support the trade of South Africa back then. In fact, it was built by IDC money.
Yeah.
And obviously things evolved and it got repositioned in the manner that it did. Having grown to support the economy, you must recall earlier that the country's ability to survive depends on the ability to sustain its economic activity. And
yeah.
That's by placing goods to market and by fetching goods from market to supply our needs.
Mm-hmm.
Now, SAF Marine was specifically located in that space.
Mm-hmm.
And times were very different then. There was apartheid at some stage. So by the time the country got confronted with the anti-apartheid movement, that with dock workers around the world refusing to handle South African ships, the then apartheid, it was best to offshore those ships, to have them taking another registry other than the South African registry and supporting the trade from the other side, because trade is what needed to be supported.
Yes.
Now, I think in the planning of things with the new dispensation, we didn't necessarily go back to tidy all of those. Least of all, we didn't insist that you still need the ships that fly the South African flag.
Mm.
And South Marine then was let go under such circumstances, which in my view was a very big mistake. Nonetheless, it helps us to rebuild a South African carrier. Doesn't have to be government-owned. South Africa, SAF Marine never eventually became government-owned.
Mm.
But it was one that was always going to serve South Africa's interest. Now, here is the reason why you need to do that.
Mm.
In international law, every ship must fly the flag of a country.
Yes.
And as such, it takes citizenship of that country.
Mm.
Now, in terms of South African law, only holders of South African issued certificates can work on South African ships unless South Africa gives that dispensation.
Mm.
So one ship is obliged to employ 100% South Africans, or at least people that are trained in South Africa.
Yes.
And if those people do not exist, then the country can give a dispensation. I work for the Maritime Safety Authority, and we are the ones that give that dispensation.
Uh-huh.
Now, you can imagine how many jobs you would have just by having ships flying the South African
flag. Yes.
You would, with this COVID story now, we are stuck with people, ship owners, that must choose which countries they want to go to or they can't go to take trade there because of the restrictions that you all are beginning to impose on ships visiting our shores.
Yeah.
Now, if you've got South African ships flying South African flag, you're never going to worry about who's going to bring my trade or who's going to take my trade to market.
Yes.
So the whole issue of ship ownership is a strategic asset to the country for reasons that I've just stated.
Aha. Now, Mokoni in Mamelodi would like to get in on the conversation. Mokoni, welcome.
Thank you, Mpo, and your guest. Hey. Molo Tata. Yeah, man, I used to be a Robben Islander in my study days in the 90s, and I used to see a lot of boats or let's say ships carrying cargoes and all that, and then only to find that they end up at the mainland, especially at your dry docks, at the Nelson Mandela Clock Tower, even at the Robben Island, what you call embarkation point, that is in Jetty 1. So the question I want to pose is to find how does black people, or especially Capetonians, I mean, also can venture into that economy, especially as much as you are saying the maritime tourism as well.
Mm.
Well, one considering that everything is closed down, but can people still prepare themselves so that even at the lighthouse, because I've seen the lighthouse in Robben Island on Mintos Hill, it's underutilized, does the technology, the maritime technology also operate within the lighthouse itself, where people can be, you know, trained to guard for that and as a heritage site as well, because it was constructed, I think, in the 1780-something. It's long been there before even the development of maritime. So I also want to know about the waterfront, which is a very big, 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 but when you get there, it's V&A, Victoria and Albert.
Mm.
You know, so we want to find out what is this colonialism. South Africans definitely changed, especially the Capetonians themselves, because they only come there as people who are looking for jobs. You don't see entrepreneurial spirit of the Capetonians, especially for the Kwekwe and the Khoisan people that are entitled to it. Only if even the Khoisan people that come from Eastern Cape, they normally come there as sheep hands, and even your catamarans that takes people to Robben Island on tourism, you find that they are manufactured in Australia. So when you find out there's no shipyards and all that, so how can black people, especially at the wharf, you know, how can we also indulge at the wharf there? Because I see fancy luxury, you know, what if you only rich people, you know, they are around that coastal area.
Okay.
So, I mean, mainland, I don't know much about maritime, but I'm very much interested. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mokoni. Thank you very much, Mokoni. Tatutilai, how do we as black people get involved in maritime economy?
This is exactly the discussion we're having. The sector now employs give or take 250,000 people. Mokoni is talking about those ships that would come in. Those ships would have needed stevedores, the people that offload the ships.
Mm.
When they broke down, they would have needed people that work at the dry docks. And you do have a very vibrant dry dock economy within the country.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a handful of jobs. It's not jobs that we overly speak about all the time. But what is more interesting is that there are more jobs that we think we should be creating. And maybe that is the question that Mokoni is really wanting to get at.
Yeah.
And to answer that question, as I was saying, there are a whole lot of services that we are offshoring as a country. I was confronted with a case 2 weeks ago, and then I realized that two more of the maritime divisions in big law firms, two in Cape Town actually, have actually shut down. And they've shut down not because there is no work to do, but because all of that work lies on the other side. Let me give you this example. You've got oil that moves between Mossel Bay and Durban or Cape Town, because Petro SA produces oil there.
Mm-hmm.
and the consumption in that region of George and the like Knysna is not enough for the production that Petro SA produces. So they reposition their produce elsewhere in the country. But I can tell you now, the ships that move that oil around the country, diesel, petrol, whichever oil you're looking at,
yeah,
they are not flying the South African flag.
Yes.
So they are not necessarily employing South Africa. But even more importantly, the insurance that covers that cargo is harvested from the London market. So when there's a dispute, two ships are involved in the South African coastline. We are all on an aeroplane going to London for arbitration. Now, in the design of things, because our legal system is just as good as the British legal system, but the parties contracting don't take into account to say all our arbitration, all our cases will be handled inshore. Now, you're busy training lawyers here, but all the work that they must do and specialized work, we are allowing it to sit on the outside. So those are all the issues that with the maritime transport policy and all the other policies that we as government are beginning to develop. We're hoping that we're going to claw back. I've just used one example in respect of insurance and law.
Yeah.
But there are a whole lot of other services, specialized professional services. We do get all those jobs. When the ship is here, it needs somebody to paint. There are people that paint there. But I'm saying that the more jobs that we need to be bidding for are these jobs that require policy, that require an awareness on the part of those that make those decisions from the companies.
Dr. Tilai, thank you so much for all the information that you've given us. More than anything, I think I'm hoping that whoever was listening, especially from a parental perspective, will try and say, listen, my daughter, my son, there is an opportunity there when it comes to South African maritime.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.